All right, I call this meeting to order of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. It's Wednesday, June 27th. It's 9:30 a.m. and we are in the Commissioners' Meeting Room in the Lincoln County Courthouse. First item on the agenda would be to establish a quorum. We have all three commissioners present, which represents a quorum. Next item would be the adoption of the consent calendar. These are items of a routine nature or items that have come before the commissioners before. Is there anything staff would like to highlight?
Commissioners, on your agenda, you did a series of interviews for the job of interim treasurer and reached a consensus decision. There's an order making that appointment, and we do have Jane Welch, who is our interim treasurer, who's here today. So,
stand up, Jane. All right. And that appointment is effective July 1st, and we will be recognizing Linda, the current treasurer, at another event, but wish her the best. Wish you both the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the consent calendar as presented.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. Next item is a series of public hearings on the county budgets. We have five different budgets. One, two, three, four, five, maybe six. Six counting Celeste's. So the Lincoln County Budget Committees have already held five public meetings, including the Celeste Area Enhanced Law Enforcement District Service, around the county on the budgets to receive public comment. The Lincoln County Budget Committees approved the 2018-19 budgets that will be presented today with any amendments recommended by the budget officer. The procedure for each budget hearing will be to open a public hearing to receive an update from the budget officer and staff. Ask for public comment. We ask each presenter to limit their comments to 5 minutes. Then there's discussion by the board, and then there will be a motion by the board. The first public hearing is on the Extension Service District Fund budget. And after that, we'll have the Solid Waste Disposal Services budget, then the Transportation Service District budget, and then the Animal Services District budget, and then the Celeste Area Enhanced Law Enforcement Service budget, and finally the Lincoln County budget. So I will open a public hearing, and budget officer, tell us what's new.
I'm Janice Respect, budget officer and finance director for the county. The Extension District budget has not been changed since the budget committee approved it. If you have any questions, Katie Jacobson is here to address them on the details of that budget.
Any questions from any
No questions.
Okay. Any comment from the public?
I have a question.
Please come forward. Identify yourself for the record, although we know you.
My name is Cynthia George, and I'm real curious as to what it is that I know you guys, I know what you guys do at the extension office, but I'm wondering how we got to where county money is put into the extension office, and why is it not supported by OSU?
I'll have Katie Jacobson respond.
Yeah, so Lincoln County Extension was actually one of the first county in Oregon that actually passed a tax service district for extension. So we've had this for many, many years. And OSU typically pays for the faculty member, such as myself. I'm paid through OSU and through Oregon Sea Grant. But it's a tax service district that typically pays for our administrative staff, secretarial support, and also things like our rent and building and that kind of stuff. So OSU typically pays for the faculty support, and the tax service district typically is spent on supplies, building, and secretarial support. So that's kind of the general makeup of our budget. I will say that if you look at sort of the trends, you know, there has been sort of less money coming in through the university sort of over the years. And it's not that our money from the county is necessarily going up. But there does seem to be sometimes less support coming in from the university as there has been in the past, or also sometimes joint positions. So like our forestry position right now is shared through three counties, as well as our family community health position is shared with two counties, Tillamook and Lincoln. So there's been sort of a trend to sort of, I guess, spread out or share resources kind of between counties when it comes to university dollars. Does that help?
And this was voted in by the people, and it's...
How long ago?
Katie, was it early, mid-90s?
Oh, man.
Or even...
66 or...
No, yeah, no. I was going to say 65, but
well,
I could be wrong.
It was after I came here. Yeah. Wasn't it more recently, late 80s maybe?
The district was in the 80s.
Doesn't the county... Don't you own the building, though?
Yeah.
Do you own the building?
Yes.
So you're
yes.
leasing the building to yourself and taking it out of the tax money? Is that...
We own the building.
Right? You own the building.
Yeah, we didn't own the previous
And if you're,
one,
they're using the funds for support of the facility, right?
So
you're actually paying yourself. You're paying back to the county that owns the facility.
Paying back the financing.
Right. So how much is the monthly going back?
We were renting a building.
Right.
Over here.
I understand that.
That's the same money that we were renting, and it seems like to me it's somewhat close to equal, isn't it?
Yeah, the rent we pay now is a little higher than the rent we paid. We were at, well, it's not there anymore, but the building that was kind of next to the rec center. However, the building we have now is also compliant with state and federal regulations,
ADA
and all of that. So a big upgrade. So OSU has a lease agreement with the county to basically be leasing that building.
Yeah. So that's my question, mm-hmm. is how much money is being charged? Because we know, I'm just saying this, and I'm not trying to cause problems, but you know, you're leasing the parole office at $5,000 a month. Mm-hmm. So I want to know, if we're playing, it's sort of
Janice enough. Will try to yeah. provide
right.
an
answer. And I can fill you in some more later on
okay.
some of our plans.
Okay. I don't want to run your meetings.
Facilities, but I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, well, it's a quick thing. $51,500
a year for lease for the OSU. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Any other public input? Any other discussion by the board?
I make one comment on this. This is a much more expensive building that the Extension Service has than the original building. The original one was rotting, falling down. It was the problem. There was no space. Today, they're in a much more modern facility. I don't have the exact difference in the number, but it is appreciable for the building cost to be in excess of $1 million to build a new building.
Yeah, and we were paying about $42 a year for the older building.
Right,
so
$51 now for a modern
yeah.
space that's also ADA compliant and just more suitable in so many respects.
Thank you for
so.
Filling in the bank.
Thanks.
Right. That
yeah.
was a legitimate question. I'm glad
yeah.
it was
yeah.
asked. Because
yeah. Yeah.
yeah, fair enough. The other thing is, this is a special tax district, so this was a district that was voted on by the voters and creates a separate tax base outside of the other tax bases. And so this budget allocates how those tax dollars will be spent that are generated by the tax from the special district.
Okay,
any other comments? I'll take some direction from council. Do we...
I think we should make motions. You close the hearing.
Close the hearing and then reopen. Okay. If there are no other discussion by the board, I'll close the public hearing on the Extension Service District Fund
mm-hmm.
budget,
mm-hmm.
and I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the resolution adopting the 2018-19 budget, making appropriations, levying taxes, and categorizing the levy for the Lincoln County Extension Service District as approved by the Lincoln County Budget Committee, and to authorize a property tax levy at the permanent tax rate of 0.0451 or 4.51 cents per thousand, and that these taxes be imposed and categorized for the tax year 2018-19 upon the assessed value on all taxable property within the county in accordance with the law as of July 1, 2018. I also move to authorize signing the certificate of appropriation of funds supporting the extension programs.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries. All right, we'll move on to the Solid Waste Disposal Services District. And again, there have been five public meetings, And I will now open the public hearing on the 2018-19 Solid Waste Disposal Services District Fund budget. Back to you.
This budget, too, has had no changes since the Budget Committee has approved it.
So, questions, comments? Okay, this is a budget that is supported by fees paid by the haulers, solid waste haulers, and not by a tax.
There's no property tax,
no property
in
tax
this one.
Involved.
And also, doesn't it include contributions from some of the large landowners to help support the Forest Patrol program as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
right.
No property tax in this
okay.
one.
Any public comment? Any further discussion from the board? All right, I'll close the public hearing. And I'll entertain a motion.
I move to approve the resolution adopting the 2018-19 budget and making appropriations for the Lincoln County Solid Waste Disposal Service District as approved by the Lincoln County Budget Committee.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries. All right, we'll now open a third public hearing on the 2018-19 Transportation Service District Fund budget. Public hearing is now open. We'll receive comments from our budget officer.
No changes to this budget either from what the Budget Committee approved.
Any questions from the commissioners? Any public comment?
Yeah.
Please come forward.
Okay, Cindy George once again, and I'm just really curious because $5 million for the transportation, and this is just the bus, right?
Correct.
The one bus?
No. All the buses.
Well, how many buses do we have?
Cindy, how big is the fleet right now?
Have Cindy please come forward.
Fleet? Well, $5 million, 17 buses?
17 buses.
17 buses, yeah. Okay.
Cindy, identify yourself.
My name is Cindy Bruce. I'm the program director for Lincoln County Transit.
Thank you.
Services. And so there's no new vehicles or anything on this budget? You're not purchasing any kind of new equipment? Because it seems you got an ending balance here of $1.2 million, right? So there should be additional services that could be provided or something with this budget. I'm just asking.
Okay. We are in the planning process now. So there are actually even additional funds that will be made available to the district.
The new state gas tax money, right?
Yes, the House Bill 2017.
Because you guys know that it's really needed. We've got a lot of people. I go to Toledo, and we've got lines of people waiting for those buses. So if there's any way that we can make sure that, and pick up elders and things like that, okay?
And
so
the tribe partners with us too, right, that they had some money for transit, and rather than doing their own bus a few years ago, they contracted with us.
Yes.
Cities of Newport and Toledo help support those loops. So Cindy, just off the top of your head, if you've got them, I've seen the numbers in the past, like number of miles, number of rides, number of passengers per year. Because I think the system is much bigger than a lot of people realize.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Always a need for more.
We put in just under 600,000 miles a year of service for the buses. We provide about 320,000 duplicated units of service.
Are you going to the valley? Are we going to the valley?
Yeah, we're connecting up with every county except Lane right now adjacent to us,
yes.
And that's finally in the works. And Lane dragging their feet, not us.
But Benton, we're getting them over to Corvallis.
7 days a week, yep. We connect up with them. It's all
good.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I've never taken the bus.
Also, for clarity, the additional funds are coming from a payroll tax that is being levied. It's being collected by the employers, and it's being distributed back to the counties where the individuals work, not where they live.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I thought I would just.
No, you don't get to leave it.
We'll get Janice back too.
Because the reason that I kind of.
Okay, Janice.
When the reason that I kind of snickered when that happened was because it was almost identical question that I asked you when I first took office.
Yes.
And at that time, would you give a brief explanation why you hold a $1.2 million dollar surplus? Because I don't think the public realizes the pressure you're under.
Yes. A large portion of our funding is grant funds. The tax base we have is 9.74 cents per thousand, which is the lowest tax base for a transit entity in the state of Oregon. So I do a lot of grant writing to keep the levels of service at an adequate amount. It doesn't meet all the needs of the people, but we are continuing our efforts to make that a reality. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but we always strive for that. This last biennium, we lost 17% of our STF and
special transportation funds.
Our special transportation funds and our 5310, which is senior and disabled funding. So I need to keep a reserve on the books so that when those grants decrease, it gives me time to find other funding and that we don't have to reduce services. And I do take pride in the almost 30 years that I've worked for the transit district that we've never had to reduce our services. So it's a commitment that I make, and I do my best to keep to our citizens to be a good steward of public funds and to keep as many services for your constituents as we can.
Yeah, can I explain your answer a little bit? The same thing you're saying. You got to have extra money.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that when you deal with grants, that you can reduce the grants, because the worst thing that happens to the public is when you pull up to the corner and the bus doesn't show up.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what that money's there for.
Yeah.
And it's a little higher surplus than I thought was necessary when I started, but over the years I've experienced and watched it went on, and it's absolutely the right thing to make sure we have a continuity of services over having to make cuts.
Yeah. Yes. And could I say again, as Cinda's supervising and liaison commissioner, though of course we're all interested in the program, I really appreciate that philosophy as well, because I know you hear, I hear things like Ms. George said all the time, would love to see more service.
Yes.
But the fact that we've never had to cut, that you've been so careful about expanding service with reasonable certainty, it's going to be sustainable. I mean, if people follow the news statewide within the last few years, like for instance, I know Lane Transit had to make significant cuts, the Salem Transit system had to make significant cuts, and maybe the only worst thing than not having service at all is to get people dependent on a service and then to have to take it away from them, and we don't want to do that, do we?
No, we don't.
Good work.
Yep.
Any other comments from commissioners? All right. I'll close the public hearing, and I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the resolution adopting the 2018-19 Transportation Service District budget, making appropriations, levying taxes, and categorizing the levy as approved by the Lincoln County Budget Committee, and to authorize a property tax levy at the permanent tax rate of 0.0974, in other words, 9.74 cents per thousand, and that these taxes be imposed and categorized for the tax year 2018-19 upon the assessed value of all taxable property within the county in accordance with law as of July 1, 2018.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries. All right, we'll move on to our fourth hearing. This is on the 2018-19 Animal Services District Fund budget.
Thank you.
And thank you, Cinda. I'll open the public hearing. I will note that there are the directors of all five of these special districts present. So thank you, Katie, thank you, Mark, thank you, Cinda, and now Laura, but go ahead, Janice.
The Animal Services District budget was changed. We added a revenue that was inadvertently omitted, a donation revenue in the amount of $25,000, which then would changes our appropriation amount for contingency by $25,000. But that's the only change we've made to this budget since the Budget Committee approved it.
Okay. Any questions from commissioners? Any public comment on the Animal Services District budget? All right, I'll close the public hearing and I'll entertain the motion.
I move to approve the resolution adopting the 2018-19 budget and making appropriations to levying taxes and categorizing the levy for the Siletz Area Enhancement.
No, one ahead, Terry. We're still on animal.
Oh, shoot. I turned the page. I went down, skipped down one. Sorry, that's why I was lost last time. I move to approve the resolution adopting 2018-19 budget, making the appropriation and levying taxes and categorizing levies for the Lincoln County Animal Service District as approved by the Lincoln County Budget Committee with the changes as submitted by the budget officer at this hearing, and to authorize the property tax levy at the permanent tax rate of 0.11 cents per thousand, and that these taxes be imposed and categorized for the tax year 2018-19 upon the assessed value on all taxable property within the county in accordance with the law as of July 1, 2018.
I'll second the motion.
And just to clarify, it's 11 cents per thousand.
That's what I said.
Just clarifying. Yep. All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries. All right.
Sorry, I put pages. I'm skipping there.
Easy to do.
We've got a lot of paper today. All right, I'll move on to the fifth public hearing. This is on the Siletz Area Enhanced Law Enforcement Service District. I'll open the public hearing, and Janice.
This budget, too, was unchanged from when the Budget Committee approved it. So.
Any questions? Any public comment?
I have a question.
Come on down.
So I'm just curious as to how many officers are supporting, how many hours of service, and pay.
Is on his way.
So.
Sheriff is on his way.
Yeah.
How many officers, how many hours of service, what else, who's paying?
And what are their rates of pay? I mean, what are, you know, because aren't they on like 24-hour shifts or some stupid thing?
No. Good morning.
They're on call or something?
Yeah, Curtis Landers, Lincoln County Sheriff. So with this law enforcement, it's $1.31 a thousand that the voters approved, and that pays for half of it. The tribe, actually, we have an agreement with them. They pay the other half of the service, and it is for 80 hours of service, so it allowed us to hire two deputies, and so it's 80 hours of enhanced services per week in the Siletz Law Enforcement District area, which is the entire fire district for Siletz.
Okay, is it just Siletz that was taxed, or is it the entire Lincoln County?
No, just the fire district.
Okay. Same as the fire district, yes. All right. So the extended rural area. Yeah.
The rural area.
Yeah.
All right.
As well.
Yeah. Any other questions? Thank you.
Okay. Any other public comment?
Yeah. Edward Biggert.
Thank you.
So will it include Walport?
No, Walport's under a separate contract, but it's not a taxing district, so that's in the general fund budget. We contract with the city directly.
Because like I heard it's the same in Walport as it is in Siletz after 3
Not
o'clock.
Exactly. No, because they're contracting out of city, get general funds to pay for that enhanced service, and here the people voted for a tax district.
Funded, the services are the same. It's both for 80 hours of enhanced services in those areas.
But there's something funded for Walport, too?
Well, the voters.
Not from this fund.
It's paid for by the city.
I think it's important that we have more police in Siletz.
Mm-hmm. They get and it's worked out well.
Yeah, it has worked out well.
Any other public comment? All right. Any other discussion by the board? I'll close the public hearing and I'll entertain a motion.
Yeah, I move to approve the resolution adopting the 2018-19 budget, making appropriations, levying taxes, and categorizing the levy from Siletz Area Enhanced Law Enforcement Service District as approved by the District Budget Committee and authorized by the property tax levy at the permanent tax rate of 1.3100 cents per thousand, and that, let's see if I got that right. Doug, you're the expert.
$1.31.
Yeah, $1.
31 cents.
That's very good. Right. The way that's written. Yes. Got it.
Per thousand.
And that these taxes be imposed and categorized for the tax year 2018-19 upon the assessed value of all taxable property within the county in accordance with the law as of July 1, 2018.
I will second the motion.
Moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
That motion carries. All right, we're now on to the sixth and final budget. This is the Lincoln County budget, and I will open the public hearing. And Janice, tell us the updates.
This budget did undergo a few changes in several funds. This is, of course, the main county budget. The total budget this year is $98,196,479. The changes that were made in the county general fund, we added $125,000 in revenues and then some corresponding expenditures. Most of that was in materials and services, and we did add a position in the parole and probation, and balanced all of that through our contingency. But the overall change in that fund is $125,000 increase in the general fund. We also changed the public works fund. The overall fund total did not change, but we moved $110,000 additional monies into materials and services from the reserves for expected expenditures. The third fund that was changed was the mental health fund, where we are recording an estimating an additional revenue of the state marijuana tax allocation of $118,444. That was put entirely to personnel services in that fund to fund a position that was slated for layoff, a clinical counselor for drug and alcohol that serves the school-based health clinics. And that money was all placed into that fund. The fourth fund that was changed was the radio communication systems funds. This is the fund that operates the all the communications for public safety. That had an additional $14,301 in revenue. Some shifts in expenditures. It was a reduction of materials and services and an increase to their ending balance or contingency fund of $23,000, and that was the extent of the changes to the Lincoln County budget.
Questions from commissioners? Public input. Any public comment?
Okay, this is Cindy George once again, and I think somehow we've got our priorities kind of backwards. So I'm seeing parole and probation here is $455,000, and yet you're only, the total budget for mental health, what I see is $377,000. Number one, what happened to the $1.2 million that was reserved for a building that was mental health money? And what and why are we putting cannabis money into mental health when all any of these clinicians have ever done is discriminate against the patients of Oregon? Those funds should be used, I would think, in other ways, maybe education, maybe to find out the truth of the medicine, maybe to support the dispensaries in your community so that they survive. But But for you to shove this, what happened to that $1.2 million? Mental health money.
There is $1.2 million that is in a capital projects fund. The mental health fund is $9.3 million total. And 4 years ago, we moved $2 million of one-time revenue into a capital projects fund in anticipation of building a new structure for all public health and mental health services.
So where is it?
So yeah,
where'd it go?
It's in a capital projects fund.
So you've moved it out.
Yeah, this is most of
it.
No,
it's within this budget.
Yeah, so within the larger budget, but what we're looking at here is local revenues, correct? Local tax revenues and like the vast majority, and operating revenues, and like the vast majority of public health and mental health money is federal and state grant funding streams and client revenues.
So yeah. What I'm seeing, to me, is abuse of our money, is spending exorbitant amounts of money on leasing facilities, building facilities, when we've got tons of buildings empty, and moving monies around. So, you know, let's get our priorities straight and actually provide service instead of empty buildings. Okay? That's just me, and
So, Commissioner, that's a legitimate question. I mean, she's asking legitimate questions on all of these. And I'm going to refer to Wayne Belmont. You and I have worked together to find locations. And there may be empty buildings, but they're not suitable for size or they don't pass ADA compliance. And that's a big challenge for us. A lot of people built buildings years ago that don't pass the ADA. And we can't take the services that are public services and put into those buildings. Would you please respond to that?
I think that's correct, and especially as it concerns health and human services. There's been a move, and this is a national move, that says that we've too often siloed these services. We are a full service provider. If you have patient-centered care, what you're really looking at doing is saying the person may need behavioral health services, may need physical health services, may need a number of things. And so the trend across the country is to try and combine those services in a single location. And that's been sort of a goal of the Health and Human Services Department. I'm sorry, or maybe the director is here.
She is.
I guess I didn't see her
typing in the back.
That for a number of years is to try and consolidate. We have services split between, I think it's five buildings now, in Newport, for instance. If someone comes in and needs multiple kinds of services, you know, you have to shuffle them around, send them to different areas in there. So that's why the money's in the capital side of things. And then the spaces we do rent are the ones that are of the size and of the quality that we can utilize right now. And so there's a pretty limited market for those kinds of spaces. We don't want to rent a whole bunch of additional buildings just because the rents might be cheap.
And can we talk like a little bit about the new HHS building project? Initially, we were talking about trying to build on this block, you know, to help save some significant lease money. I mean, you know, and to consolidate the services so it could be better service for the public. It looks like environmental issues are going to prevent us from building on that site. But like one thing we explored, some of HHS is in the Western Tidal building right now. Mm-hmm. And we explored buying that building and remodeling it to try and fit the needs, but that was going to be cost prohibitive, actually cost more than building a brand new building, so we shelved that. But there's exploration, very preliminary exploration going on now, of an opportunity that may come up to acquire another building that looks like, because it's of a different design and layout, it might suit our needs and actually be less expensive than a new building. So we are working behind the scenes on a lot of this stuff.
Right. So. Let me finish up a little bit here, since I'm the one that does a lot of the building exploration and analysis. Wayne does, he's the expert, but over the years I've learned a lot of skills in this area and been lucky at finding places like the Extension Service building. I think that you're satisfied with the building, trying to find buildings. And the compliance problem is so critical that when we built that building, I think we were 3 inches off on a doorknob. Mm-hmm. And we had to wait to get the engineering for a doorknob. even though the building was all set up. And these things are extremely challenging today that in the past used to go fairly simple. The part about the clinic counselor, Wayne, would you expand on that part? Because the clinic counselor money, we possibly could have taken the money, the $1.2 million, put it there. But that would have meant we never could probably get a HHS building built, because when these grants come down the line, you don't have time to go get the money. You have to have it sitting there to say you're ready to go.
And it was one-time funds.
Right. Yeah.
And I think the funds, and Janice, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but these are not funds, the $118,000 that were coming in, were not funds we anticipated. This is something that
was... Right, and so could Rebecca maybe explain how we're going to use that money exactly? Would you mind?
Well,
and Wayne, and can I something else? Because I think what Terry was referring there to the money we moved out of contingency to restore the position for the counselor in the school-based health centers. That's what I think Terry was referencing just there.
We didn't move any money out of there. We didn't have to because we had this other revenue that more than amply covered that position from the state. That
we could move it if we had to.
We were unaware that that revenue was available to us, but it's part of the state's marijuana tax that they are allocating out to all counties or all programs. Yeah.
This is the third distribution we've gotten from the state, and the state does not provide much background or detail information, so we really don't know what period of time.
Just be careful with that. I don't think this is that
distribution. This is not that same distribution.
No, this is a different pot of money. Remember when the legislature, in their infinite wisdom, when they did this, divided the money into a whole series of little pots and silos and said, we're going to spend this on this.
From another source, and
this is from another source that we understood was going to be available to the counties, but originally we thought was not going to be distributed to the counties. And then all of a sudden, boom, here it comes to us. So this is not that
marijuana
the money
tax
that's the
money.
Tax money. No, this is from a different pot of money.
Okay.
So this is Rebecca Austin, HHS Interim Director. And did you want me to address how we're going to spend the marijuana money?
Yes, right.
Okay.
Well, the marijuana money or this $118,000?
Yeah, the $118,000.
The $118,000 is the marijuana money that we were not expecting. And I think we decided that that's what we would use for to assure that we didn't have to lay off the person that does alcohol and drug counseling for our school-based health centers. So we have four school-based health centers, and she goes around and visits each health center. So she's there, I think, at least one day a week at each health center and counsels students that have drug and alcohol concerns.
Okay. So my comment to that is back at the time I've worked with HHS over the years, they try to make children the priority. And a lot of issues, and this is one where children became the priority, and I think that's what the public wanted when we made that decision. There was one other question, and you may be able to know the answer, but she made a comment related to parole and probation and the difference in funds. Parole and probation money that goes, it comes from the state funds directly, if I understand right.
That's correct.
And so it's not taking away from the general fund. When they put extra money in, it's money that's dedicated directly to the state, parole and probation.
Parole and probation uses no general fund money. It's all funded by the state.
Well, we put a little bit of money
well,
in.
Well, there are a couple of programs that are related, that are run by parole and probation, but the main function of parole and probation is state funded.
Yeah, even though they're county employees, it's like the state pays for the administration and for the parole officers, and isn't it a formula based on the number of cases they've got under supervision?
Something like that.
My only other question on the parole and probation money is cannabis tax money from the state coming into parole and probation?
No.
So that
I'm not
like
that I know
no,
of.
It's not.
Not that I know of.
So. All right.
So I think I've answered all your questions.
Thank you.
And I tried to write it down as quick as you went.
Can I ask, where does the parole and probation, my name's Edward Biggergan, where does the parole and probation money, that the parolees and the probationees, where does that money go?
Oh, the supervision fees?
Where does that money go?
Well, that's what helped pay for, that was the biggest chunk of, like, for instance, what paid for the three transitional houses, the TAPS housing. Yeah, that's where our director had been saving that up for several years, and that's how she was able to get those houses acquired, and now it will help to maintain them, and I think help provide some of the money for programming for the folks using those houses as well.
And I'm curious, will there be any of this money going towards mental, detox and rehabilitation centers?
Which money are you talking about?
This
$100,000. Miss Austin.
And could I have something on that as well? And we're just getting a meeting set up, Samaritan Health. We had had kind of a dialogue going between Lincoln County, Samaritan, and some other interested partners about trying to get a rehab back here in the county. And Samaritan has made a tentative commitment. Basically, they've opened a detox rehab in Lebanon. They've hired a director for the program, and their long-term commitment was they want to have a facility here in Lincoln County, but they say, you know, like they're willing to participate in some ways, like potentially providing a building, providing medical supervision, but they're looking for the county and the community to step up and partner in a big way. And I think we've got an additional meeting for that scheduled sometime in July. I just saw that in my mail. And Rebecca, what would you add on that?
Right. So just to answer your question about the $118,000, it will be going to support this one person. And to try to keep, to shore up our co-occurring program that's kind of taken a big hit in the budget.
What's the co-occurring?
The co-occurring is treating people that have a dual diagnosis of drug or alcohol and mental health.
Because no disrespect to the council or anybody, I believe it's really a crime, it's criminal that we don't have something in this town. Yesterday, I tried to get a friend into Good Samaritan. They said, we do inpatient, or we do, what was it, Donna?
Medical
detox, because this person's been on.
If you're ill enough to need hospitalization, they'll take you, but otherwise, no.
Right, and that person, they almost turned her away. Well, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
This is Donna.
I'm Donna Patterson, and I took care of...
Did we get that for the record? I think we...
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been taking care of this elderly lady, and she is a very heavy drinker, and she wanted to go to detox yesterday. Mm-hmm. And we'd been talking about it, and I went to the hospital, and I talked to the ladies out front, and they said that they did medical detox, or I wouldn't have taken this lady out of her house, which had to go down 25 stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to have Eddie help me to get her down the stairs. And I get her there, and they're just going to give her a banana bag and send her home. And I said, no. And they said, well, we don't have the facilities to take care of her. And that's not right. What are these elderly people supposed to do? You know, and I got talked to him into at least keeping her overnight, and I'm supposed to pick her up today. That's not a detox.
No, it isn't.
Do we have funds to help people like this? I mean,
we couldn't take it on ourselves, but potentially, if we do get a partnership with Samaritan and other community people,
I called.
It's a priority. We're trying to make it happen.
I called everybody,
Sheriff.
Corvallis, every place.
I was just going to mention that there is a new detox center opening up north.
Oh, Powerhouse?
The house is today.
Yeah.
Right, up in Otis.
In Otis?
But yeah. I'm not sure if that's a detox. Is it a detox or is it just a...
medically assisted detox.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think that's an example of what we're trying to do is we don't have the financial resources for the county to be able to provide those services on our own, but I think with the change in the leadership at Health and Human Services, we're working much harder to develop partnerships and collaborative efforts where together we are able to, or hopefully we'll be able to deliver some of these services that we haven't been able to do yet. But certainly that would be an area of great need and one that I know we're working with Samaritan and other private providers in an effort to try to address that need.
Mr. Yeah. Chair, may I repeat what you said, but just with a slight variation,
sure.
That I believe since the change in leadership in HHS, what I am hearing from the partners is all of a sudden there's a new culture of collaboration, and they appreciate the attitude and the willingness of us here in Lincoln County to really talk in a meaningful way and start developing solutions to problems like this.
So,
And even the stipulations, if you have Medicare, they mm-hmm. they can't help you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's around
virtually every senior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and there was a service provided, but
Truman Center. Nonprofit. Yep, I joined.
We missed the Truman yeah. Center.
I know. Well, I joined that board in 2007 when it was on the verge of collapse. We kept it going five more years, but there were just too many challenges finally.
So as these entities come and go, that's why we're now not able. Yeah. We don't have that kind of service available, but we're working on it. Commissioner Thompson.
I worked on this issue a lot when I was a state representative and spent a lot of time on it. I don't think the public realizes just how expensive this is.
Yeah.
If you get a person that needs drug abuse, detox, and the follow-up to really get them to be able to correct their problem and have a chance. I spent a lot of time with Lynn Lundquist on this issue. You better grab a couple $100,000. So yeah. What happens is you get these private businesses. ADEC is a very successful one in McMinnville. Mm-hmm. It takes huge amounts of money, and only people that have money can afford to go there. Yeah. The other people think they want to get these services, and we'd like to deliver it. But the expenses are so high that the business soon goes under mm-hmm. because they can't support the fees that it takes. It's going to take something as large as the federal government to take it on nationally. A small community like this cannot supply services.
I was curious. We make so much money. I don't know how much we make on seafood and wine. We have all kinds of convenience stores. Every store in this town just about sells alcohol. Mm-hmm. Could there be some taxes or something taken from that? Because we're ready to sell them the alcohol, but once they're down on the street and dragging their hind ends and dying, then we're not ready to do anything for them. That's criminal.
Seafood and wine all goes to the Chamber of Commerce, not one penny to local government, and we do get a slice of the alcohol and drug the alcohol taxes, but it's not nearly enough to really deal with the impacts.
What are the challenges?
Well, among other things, I think, you know, we've got like, what is it? I think effectively the lowest beer tax in the nation, and for many years the alcohol industry fought any efforts to increase it, and now with the rise of the microbrew industry, they're as well, you know, that on top of the traditional saying, you know, you try and raise the taxes and it'll you know, and it'll hurt a budding, thriving business that brings people to Oregon.
That's making the money off of the misery of others.
Yeah. Because, you know, again, it's not Cary Nation and trying to stop people from enjoying alcohol responsibly that they say probably 85 to 90% of adults do enjoy it responsibly, but for the ones who abuse it, for children who abuse it, the health costs, the cost in lost productivity, the health care costs are just staggering, and in that sense, the industry is not paying its share of its impacts.
Thank you.
In my opinion. That's just my opinion. Yes. Yeah, I wanted to clarify. Yeah.
We'll talk over that.
Yes.
Okay. Any other public comment on the general fund, the general budget for the county? All right. I'll close the public hearing. Any other discussion by the commissioners? That was good conversation.
Yep.
Good information, good questions.
Ready for a motion?
I am.
I move to approve the resolution adopting the 2018-19 Lincoln County budget, making appropriations, levying taxes, and categorizing the levy as approved by the Lincoln County Budget Committee with the changes as submitted by the budget officer at this hearing, and to authorize a property tax levy at the permanent tax rate of $2.8202, in other words, $2.82 per thousand for general operations, and that these taxes be imposed and categorized for the tax year 2018-19 upon the assessed value of all taxable property within the county in accordance with law as of July 1, 2018.
Second. I'm not going to ask if there's any more discussion. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That motion carries.
I'd like to comment about this.
Please comment.
You know, I've been through a lot of budget processes over the years, and most of the time it's fairly simple. With the discussion we had here is the discussion we'd actually like to have. more often so the public understands how this budget goes together, and I appreciated the questions, and they were on point.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Agreed. Again, appreciate the input. All right.
So, Janice, you get to take a couple of days breather and then start work on the next one, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It really is. That's another thing that's, even though as long as I've been covering county government, coming into office 14 years ago, really brought home to me that this is really almost a year-round process now. But it says
get prepared for the auditor to audit last year's books, and then we'll know where we were when we started the current fiscal year.
Yep.
Which is always the case. All right. Having concluded the public hearings on budgets, we'll move on to decision and action items. And again, we have several here. First one is an order approving the application for a shoreline protection structure in the Lincoln Beach area with public beach access. This came before us, I believe, last week. We had some discussion. There was a question about access and ADA accessibility. Any other questions or comments from commissioners?
Commissioner Savant, I'll just provide a little update. We've done some checking into the issues here. And the order that you have in front of you actually adds some clarification and conditions. If you approve this, to authorize the Public Works Director to sign off on the application. We did go back and look at the standard conditions that the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department puts on these, is that the structure has to be installed and maintained by the applicants. And we wanted to make sure that's fine, that works, and that's part of the conditions, but that there's no cost to either the county or the public for us signing on the application. So that's actually included in this specific order, that particular condition. And we're making sure that's, and we've made some contact with the Schlicker and Associates, who is the engineers preparing this permit on behalf of the property owners out there. And they understand that was their expectation too. But we want to just make it very clear to all the parties involved that that's the way this would proceed.
So just to clarify, the maintenance of our public access will be provided by the other property owners?
The beach side of this thing, the riprap, the beachfront protective structure will be installed and maintained by the applicants.
And not, the access not, itself?
That, the access, remember, is part of, if you
part
remember
of
how this works, and maybe we'll get Public Works Director Kenyon up here if you have any questions on that. But remember, the plan was they put in this riprap, and then they had the access that comes up to the edge of the public easement. Right now, it's a straight 12 or 14 foot drop from the end of the public easement onto the beach.
Okay, I guess I'd like clarification. You say the applicants are going to maintain it. Are we not an applicant?
No, that's the clarification of the order is that the applicants, meaning the other three parties that are applying, and the county has and the public have no costs involved in either the installation or the maintenance of this.
Okay.
So that's the condition. Before you go, Roy, can you talk to me on this quite a bit, because I'm the one that asked the question. And he showed me a picture of how it was built. I was a lot more confident. They take big boulders and place it into cement structure. I mean, it can break down, but in the Oceanside, the parks are part of what we believe is that. Would you stand on that?
Yeah, Roy Kenyon, Lincoln County Public Works Director. And what you have to remember is this structure actually is sitting on the beach.
Yeah.
And OPRD, Oregon Parks and Rec, they're the ones that have the jurisdiction there. And so in the end, they're the ones that do the inspections. They're the ones that at some point in time, if they see that this structure is starting to erode in some way, they're the ones that basically take the reins and contact the installers, the property owners, and require them to maintain the structure. The stairs themselves are basically large, flat boulders that are keyed in the riprap process. And our public beach access happens to be in the middle of this project. Normally they would not do this. It would have been three properties that sat adjacent to each other, and they key in the riprap to protect the shoreline. But because there is a public right-of-way there, and they do not have the right to block the public right-of-way, even though naturally it blocked itself through erosion, they can't actually block that themselves through their own project, so they actually had to make sure that whatever the design was, it actually enabled people to still access at that point. And from what I understand from Jay Sennewald, who is with Oregon State Parks, who is the one that basically will ultimately sign off on the permit, he's seen this very same installation in multiple places up and down the Oregon coast, and he's actually very confident that what they're going to install is going to have longevity.
Yeah, I'm satisfied.
I'm satisfied.
Okay. Everything's clarified. So.
All right. Thank you. I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we approve the application for a shoreline protection structure in the Lincoln Beach area with public beach access.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any other discussion?
Again, just to clarify that all this does is move it to Oregon State Parks, which will conduct an additional public process for input and their ultimate approval or rejection of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries. Next item we'll move on is an order approving a materials management plan, and Director Salins of our Solid Waste District is here to update us.
Mark Salins, Lincoln County Solid Waste District, and I'm here today to make the second but quicker presentation of the materials management plan that your Solid Waste Advisory Committee has been working on for the last year and a half. You got the more detailed version in a presentation at your joint meeting with the Walport City Council a few weeks back, and as is typically our requirement for major things like a plan adoption, present the details at one meeting, and then basically come back for adoption, and that's what we're doing today. So real quick, I'm going to cover, just show you the outline of the plan again. Given the huge amount of impact and swirling controversy and everything else that has gone on with Chandra's decision to quit accepting major portions of recyclable material, I wanted to sort of integrate how we were able to sort of address that in the plan, even though when we started writing the plan over a year ago, we had no idea this was going to happen. And then, of course, the main focus is to look at the plan recommendations and adopt the plan. So just by way of the quick outline, you all have versions of the completed plan. This has gone to DEQ for their review. Of course, Department of Environmental Quality paid for half of this effort through a grant that we received from them. There's a chapter, basically introduction and background, a look at what our local conditions are, which is very important because rural counties have constraints in terms of distances and transportation that you typically don't have in the valley. Look at our existing countywide system arrangement practices. Look specifically at our solid waste management system in particular. Analyze all that, come up with some recommendations. Convert the plan from solid waste management only to materials management, which as I outlined is more of a cradle to grave kind of plan where you're looking at everything from the sorts of things we can't control, like extraction processes, development of products, those sorts of things, onto end-of-life management for those products. So here's the interesting part. If you look at what's been happening for the last 25 years, China provided a very handy marketplace for basically huge bales of recyclable material at a price that couldn't be beat anyplace else in the world. And as a result, they've handled about 85% of a lot of the recyclable material that they're now no longer accepting. Now, you can't blame China for that necessarily. They have their own environmental consequences of that. Probably the blame is more to do with the the very short-term notice that was given. They started talking about the fact that they might do this mid-last year, and by January, it was already happening. So you're looking at 106 million tons of plastic that they've taken out of those bundles of materials over the last 25 years. That amounts to 4.2 million tons per year for the last 25 years. As a comparison, in 2016, Oregon recovered 2.3 million tons of recyclable material, of which only 46,000 tons were plastics, which represents 1 to 2% of what China was taking. That's to kind of scale the state of Oregon against basically this world market that was going to China. Bringing it down to a local level, in 2016, Lincoln County recovered an estimated 340 tons of plastics out of 17,013 total tons of recovered material. The problem is China, there's no indication that China won't continue to do this. We won't have some kind of response in terms of new infrastructure to deal with these plastics and other materials in the short term. Hopefully we will in the longer
term. Can I stop you there?
Sure.
You may not be aware, but I handed Wayne the article from Reed College.
Yes.
A scientist has just found three microorganisms that eat polyethylene plastic, and I was like, yay, we finally found something that may be able to have short-term impacts on part of this plastic debris.
Right.
That's a big deal.
Thank you for that, Commissioner Thompson. And it's technologies like that that have sort of been being looked at, and in some cases, successes have been being announced here and there. Rather than them being sort of interesting studies, they might very well end up providing the lifeline, both in the short term and the longer term. So part of what I used was an article that was out about a week ago that basically underscored how China just handed the world an 111 million ton trash problem by 2030. And as background to that, that would assume that there's no change in terms of how people feel about plastics. And in fact, it projects an increase in the amount of plastic that will continue to be produced. So with that as a backdrop, by weight, even though you're looking at these huge numbers, if you come down to, say, the state of Oregon and locally, by weight, which is how we measure our recovery rate, plastics really isn't an issue for Lincoln County. However, as we know, in the longer term, there are environmental impacts from plastics. You can argue that our little tiny county doesn't make a difference, but on the other hand, we live in one of the most pristine natural areas in the world. And even more importantly, recycling plastics is often viewed as the very symbol of recycling, and it's very important to people in general. So we're not trying to say that we're not going to be proceeding to improve how we deal with plastics, things like what Commissioner Thompson just mentioned. But what we are saying is that there are an awful lot of other things that we really have to focus on that are much bigger components of our management system, and at that same time be looking for opportunities to replace the lost market in China. So one way of looking at that is this pie chart that you can get out of the Department of Environmental Quality annual report. You'll see in the upper right-hand corner, plastics is only 2% of what's recovered. And then you look at things like cardboard, fiber, very big in this county. Food waste, I would say the reason that number is so small is there are very few food recovery programs. Food waste actually accounts for something like 15 to 20% of what's going to landfills today. Yard debris, another huge one in our county. Metals, wood waste. Those things are part of what we want to try to target in our new plan in terms of not ignoring plastics, but on focusing on trying to keep our overall recovery rate up. So having said that, as you recall, there were 10 recommendations suggested by the SWAC, which are designed to maintain and increase our recovery rate, basically by focusing on those things that we can control. We may recycle fewer things, for instance, but we'll do a much better job of it. So one of the recommendations you'll see is to try to implement a countywide organics collection program. That in itself would be huge. That could amount to 30% or more of our recovery rate per year if we were able to achieve that. keeping an eye on new opportunities, markets, technology, new processing infrastructure, as Commissioner Thompson just mentioned, is going to be a big part of what the SWAC looks into. Increasing our citizen and tourist education about how best to utilize infrastructure we have. And I should say, doing a better job of explaining why that infrastructure is the way it is. Our system's very complicated. People tend to not understand increased costs, but you can look at it this way. As is commonly sort of reported now, it's fine if you want to get rid of a particular recyclable material, but the question becomes, do you want to pay three times as much money to do that as it would cost you to send it to the landfill? Those are the realities of a marketplace that we don't control. Sure, you can sell it, but how much are you willing to sell it for? And at some point, many of those products at no cost, whether even if you were willing to pay 10 times as much, there is no market. And in essence, until a market develops, it is trash. It may once have been a recyclable product, but if there's no market, it's basically trash. And then another big one is investing much more effort in youth education.
So Mark, before you go on, back to the focusing on the things we can control, you talked about a compostable program, and
right.
I know it's available, I believe, in Newport, but what are some of the hurdles to making that more widely available?
There are a couple of hurdles. As you'll recall, starting with cost, and I won't say this would necessarily end up being the cost for a new area of the county that would decide to do it, because each time you add an increment, sometimes it can be less expensive. But starting with the city of Newport, the citizens of Newport actually imposed upon themselves basically a $5 increase in their monthly bill in order to be able to have curbside organics and compostables. Now, having said that, you think about how much of a volume woody debris and food waste can be in your trash can. In essence, when that program was approved and adopted, you could switch down to a smaller trash can, which many people did, and basically the increase in your monthly bill was $1.19, I think it was. So looking at that, I know Doll Disposal is floating, seems to be going pretty well, a proposal to have at least a woody debris collection program. North Lincoln Sanitary has talked with Lincoln City on a variety of different topics of where they may be able to, you know, have some system until they can, you know, basically join in. The other hurdle is, where do we take it? And although composting is considered one of the best uses of woody debris and food waste, DEQ itself has got a very complicated composting facility rule structure. PRC, where we currently take our compostable material, which is right across from the landfill in Corvallis, they have no more room to expand. So one of the complications will be, can we even establish a marketplace to take the rest of what we have in the county? Now, having said that, since we're already there with Thompson's, hopefully that would help. But in all honesty, that is a hurdle, and we don't know the answer to that right now.
I took a tour of that facility a couple of weeks ago, and you're right, they're at capacity.
Yeah.
There's no more space to do the cooking.
Well, you remember when we went there, they warned us that they were starting to run out of space.
Yeah.
And that was only a couple of years ago, and it's like, yeah. So, you know, whether something will happen to, you know, nudge and somehow expand at that area, or a similar facility could get started someplace. For us in Lincoln County, of course, it was fortunate for us that it's so close, and it's right next to where the landfill is anyway.
Okay.
So this is just the entire list of recommendations. I'm going to quickly move through what those were. The first five are sort of our focus area. We've been talking a lot about woody debris and food waste. It's by far the largest component by weight of our waste system. And this second bullet underscores the impact it can have in the successful organics program implemented by Thompson Sanitary Service showed that 31% of their recovered material in 2017 was woody debris and food waste. And I find that interesting is that on a statewide and national average, generally you'll find figures that say about 30% of what's currently going to the landfill is woody debris and food waste. Stunning fact is that for the county as a whole, just the Thompson's franchise area represents as much as 7 to 10% of the weight of all recovered material. So you start imagining taking that and expanding to the rest of the county, it's pretty obvious how big that first recommendation is. Second one, this was a very controversial one. Consider instituting a countywide visitor environmental impact fee. The idea here was there are areas around the country that charge a variety of fees. I'm not saying that that's good or bad. I'm only pointing out here that we live in a very large tourism area. We reap the benefits of that tourism through our economy. But at the same time, as more and more stresses are placed on our, basically our solid waste infrastructure, such as, you know, what if we wanted to build a facility to deal with stockpiling plastics or something? It's only our ratepayers, basically, that support most of that. So rather than just make this an out-and-out recommendation, the thought was here that the county could, at some future time, choose to put together a stakeholders group to really look at this. Now, get businesses in the room, get all the appropriate people in the room, and basically say, you know, does this make sense in terms of where we want to go? Not, it doesn't presuppose that there's an answer, yes or no, what would come out of that. Just that it was enough feeling that simply continuing to raise rates to try to take care of all these things on a limited base was probably not going to get us there. Modernize and update our franchise agreements. As you know, although the counties are in state law viewed as sort of the solid waste managers, we do not have jurisdiction inside the city. So under this one, the idea was is that the county could in fact choose to take a look at their franchise agreements, evaluate how they're working at this point in time, potentially come up with a more modern version of that, and then you know, look at that in terms of whether it operates better or not, and then suggest that as a model that cities could choose to use if they wanted to. And this will be a theme that you would find probably traditionally in more rural areas of Oregon. It's not uncommon to have franchise agreements that are very old. I mean, that most of it, like for us, is handled through the rate review process. So there's not a lot of reason to go back and take a look at the original franchise agreement. On the other hand, a more modern system, particularly with the challenges we have, there is an argument that says you can integrate some of those things into your franchise agreement. And again, all this is more or less a recommendation to go through the exercise. Doesn't mean we do it next year, just means it's out there as a possibility of what could help us. Implement a countywide school district waste reduction and recycling program. I'm going to cut to the chase on this one. We've been doing this sort of thing for years. The haulers do a lot of school programs, the district does. We've had times that we've had some success with Oregon Green School status. Trouble is, all those times it's always relied on a particular teacher who happened to be teaching at a particular school. You know, you get something great going, 2 years later they move out of district and you start over again. So the concept here was that we needed to really integrate into our system, meaning the school district, the solid waste district, the haulers, everybody on board, to realize that if we're really going to do a true materials management solid waste education program, everybody's got to be involved and there's got to be a commitment to that. Now, fortunately, we already met at least the start of one of these goals, and that we were able to receive a grant from DEQ already this year, and we have a pilot program going at Newport Middle School and Sam Case, basically primarily to purchase a lot of the materials and supplies that are needed for the program. Monitoring waste and recycling, as was mentioned during the budget, the district relies on user fees that are based on trash receipts. So at any given time, we always know how much trash the county has generated. We don't necessarily know how many tons of recyclable material are occurring. And that traditionally is done through an annual summary that then comes out as a DEQ report. And typically that report is available about 8 months into the year. You're just trying to summarize. That information isn't very useful. North Lincoln Sanitary provides a very detailed report on a monthly basis. It's not a requirement for them at this point. The SWAC looked at that, and I should point out, in case people don't know, all three of the franchise haulers are members of the Solid Waste Advisory Committee, so they're standing behind these recommendations as well. The idea was to have some kind of report, both waste and recycling, that can be looked at more frequently by the Solid Waste Advisory Committee, so we actually know in stream, you know, like, okay, all of a sudden we experiment, we're sending off some of our plastics to, you know, maybe a pilot project, as Commissioner Thompson was talking about. Let's be able to talk about what that actually resulted in. You know, did it improve our statistics or not? You know, what were the fuel costs associated with that? All those sorts of things. So that's the idea here, along with also keeping an eye to whatever new technologies or opportunities come up. Basically just having a more proactive. And the reason this particular suggestion is important is in a lot of ways, our recycling system was really pretty static. We didn't make a lot of huge changes for a long time. We can't afford for that to be static at this point in time. And then the last 6 through 10 are just a nod that the existing programs that we have should continue to improve public education, citizens. In a way, it's new because it says and tourists, so we're adding that. Continue our hazardous waste demand, our enforcement program, our recycled latex paint program, and as necessary, go back and take a look at what revisions we may need to our debris management plan. In wrap up, we originally had intended to have three public forums for adoption prior to adoption. Rather than do that, we ended up making the decision to actually present this plan to all the cities individually. I'm happy to report that we were successful in getting to five of those. Unfortunately, we were not able to get on the Toledo or the Sluts agendas before today. We are going to be doing that in the next couple of weeks. But I can say that the other five cities, basically by consensus, all agreed that this plan should move forward with its recommendations, and you either have or will be receiving letters of support from those five cities. So having said that, I wouldn't really expect there to be much difference in terms of the reaction, say, from Sluts and Toledo. And that's it.
Okay. Commissioners, questions?
I don't have any questions. I think whatever questions I had were answered. We were also present when this was presented to Waldport, and I'm satisfied. Yep.
So I do have a question. When is the household hazardous waste event? I understand there's one scheduled in July.
Yes, and thank you for asking that. It's Saturday, July 21st. I have to say, to be determined, we're 99% sure that we're going to get the okay to hold it at the Toledo Fire Station. With recent events in Toledo, I'm having to go through the process of reconfirming that. I talked to the fire station yesterday, and they seem to think that that's fine. So basically, step one, we'll get the crew in there from Clean Harbor. Step two, any business or conditionally exempt generator of hazardous waste can call our office and set up for an appointment if they want to get rid of material. The difference is those people have to pay for that. They don't have to pay for it at the time of delivery, but basically between around 8:30 and 10 a.m. we can set up appointments for your business, or we've had times when EPA even has come in, dropped off their stuff. We basically pay the entire freight for the event and then invoice. And then from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., the public is invited to drop off their household hazardous waste at the Toledo Fire Station.
At no cost.
On Saturday, July 21st.
But there's no cost to the...
And there's no cost, yes.
Does that include latex paint?
Well, good question again. We will accept it. However, this is where we highlight to the public that you can drop off your latex paint at any time. and also your oil-based paint through the paint stewardship program at all four of our transfer stations. So we would rather not have paint come other than, and this is a terrible answer, cans of paint that you know are paint that no longer are identifiable, the label has come off, all that sort of thing. The paint stewardship program will not accept those anyway. So if you have cans like that that aren't going to be accepted through the program, we will be taking those. Okay. Similarly, things like car batteries, yes, if you happen to have one, we'd rather you take it to the transfer station so we don't have to deal with it. We're really trying to focus on true hazardous material, pesticides, oxidizers, herbicides. In East County, interestingly, that's when we usually end up getting a lot of this stuff because there is a lot more agricultural activity that goes on out there.
Okay. Other questions?
No.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we approve the order adopting the materials management plan for Lincoln County.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. Good work.
Pardon me, I wonder if I could kind of interrupt the process. I've got to be back at my office at 11, and I just had a very brief constituent input and request to submit.
Sure.
It'll take me about a second.
All right.
And if not,
go ahead.
I can have. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Happy to accommodate you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. My name is Penelope Kazmarek. Good morning, commissioners and county council. Although I do not necessarily look at things exactly as you do sometimes, oftentimes I do, and I'm grateful to each of you for your service to our county. With a father who once served in your position, I'm aware of what a difficult and thankless job it can sometimes be. This morning, I'm here as a representative of Common Sense Lincoln County, the large, unrelenting, and arguably pesky group of folks who persist in declaring concerns regarding the presently planned expenditures for the old fairground site. There can be no arguing that there's been significant falderal regarding the planning for this site, as evidenced by the broad sampling of folks who continue to ask questions and voice concerns about the process thus far, and doubts with regards to the proposed expenditures using transient room taxes, possible urban renewal money, and very likely other monies to redevelop the old fairground site, and wondering whether or not this makes best sense. Meetings, plans, and the hiring of various consultants regarding the county fair, the fairground property, and the construction of a possible convention center, exhibit hall, and multi-purpose building have been underway for years. That the process has been lengthy is proper, since we're talking about two exceedingly important things here: the best interests of Lincoln County citizens and a whole heap of money. Someone smarter than me once said, sometimes you have to look back in order to understand the things that lie ahead. In 1996, on behalf of the people of Lincoln County, the chair of the Board of Commissioners, the chair of the Lincoln County Fair Board, the superintendent of Lincoln County School District, and the mayor of Newport reached the unanimous agreement that, and I quote, the fairground should be moved to a different location. They went on to note in that same intergovernmental agreement that, and again, I quote, such a change will require community support, and that support must include not only the parties here in agreement, but other interest groups, communities, governmental entities, and the public. I have to think that the public servants representing the city, the county, schools, and the fair had good reasons for deciding to relocate the Lincoln County Fair and observing the need for the broadest possible public support. At present, no evidence exists that there is broad public support for the county's current master plan for redevelopment of the fairgrounds. Public comment at Master Plan Vision Committee meetings and at the Depot Bay meeting of the County Commissioners has been overwhelmingly opposed to any size convention center, exhibit hall, and multi-purpose building. For instance, the 22 people who spoke during the public comment at the June Master Plan Vision Committee meeting, only two supported the Commons development plan. A few youngsters and moms spoke to keep 4-H and 4-H facilities. However, everyone else spoke against the plan. However, by referring this matter to the voters in November, we can objectively and fairly come to unequivocal agreement with regards to what the majority of the citizens in Lincoln County estimate is the wisest and best use of that property. On behalf of the many and the true spirit of a commons for all citizens of Lincoln County, we, Common Sense Lincoln County, therefore ask that the commissioners please consider referring the matter to the voters by placing it on the November 2018 ballot. We ask for this referral in order to prove the broad public support you claim and which our earlier community leaders determined was so critical. To do so would save the people of Lincoln County the expense and time to collect signatures to draft an initiative. We believe it is imperative that the people of Lincoln County vote on this issue before the county commits us to funding this master plan. And while we understand that you will need to consult among yourselves and with county council before rendering your decision, we ask that you respond, please, within a week. A yes decision means you will refer the issue to appear on the November 2018 ballot, and a no decision would indicate that you decline to do so. A no decision will signal that we, the people, will move forward with an initiative to ensure that the people of Lincoln County will have a chance to vote on the issue. I am submitting this letter to be entered into the meeting record. It includes my email and phone number, so you can provide us with your decision. Thanks very much for your time and thoughtful consideration, and also for the exception of letting me weigh in before the hour. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, back to the agenda. We're now at item 6.3, which is ratification of collective bargaining agreement with the Lincoln County. We'll get a copy of that from our recorder. Ratification of the collective bargaining agreement with the Lincoln County Employee Association, LCEA General, and DDAs, that's for the period July 1st, 2018 to June 30, 2021, which is 3 years. Welcome, and please introduce yourself.
Commissioners and Chair, I'm Jerry Herbage, Assistant County Counsel for the record. If it would please the board, I would like to talk about 3, 4, and 5 together to expedite things. They have a lot in common. Would that be okay?
And yes, that's fine.
Thank you. You can take separate votes on that. So, yes, you have 3 agreements before you, and there is a sub-agreement, which is the deputy DA's. And the 3 years were up. Generally, these run on 3-year cycles. So we had negotiations. Representatives for the union were Kevin Keeney and David Wood. And the county team consisted of Michael Herford, Bridget Robertson, Kristen Ewell, myself, and then supplementary for the various departments involved, Roy Kenyon, Cinda Bruce, Geraldine Mandel, Rebecca Austin. Wayne was very helpful in the background and providing advice and support. So we met 4 times, April 4th, and then May 4th, May 21st, and June 18th. All of these agreements have these important things. I remember the chair asked, and the board supported this, that we change our reimbursement and travel policy. So all of these agreements have that in place, where we're going to go away from the per diem, you get so much per meal, and it'll be based on credit card transactions. And I know that was important to you. Another important thing to the board was the biweekly paycheck, the ability to go to that. All of these agreements allow for that with 45-day notice. They include a 2.5% COLA. There's a couple of variations. The transit has like a quarter an hour extra for dispatch, and there is a new schedule for deputy DA3s and that we included. All the agreements bump up the life insurance from 20 to 40,000. And they continue the health coverage program that we have. Apart from that, there was housekeeping, little nuances, but those are the important things to bring to your attention. This was handled in an interesting way in that the county had a real desire to wrap these up so that we don't have to worry about retroactive pay and you know, retroactive issues and so on. And so we did a what-if proposal. We worked really hard on the last meeting, June 18th, and we actually reached agreements on all of these items. What's a real bonus is one of these units is eligible for arbitration in the process, and that's the deputy DA's. You will avoid expensive arbitration if this is ratified, okay? And I use the word ratified. Let me explain that the unions will be voting and are voting on this. Their vote is due on, well, it's today at 5 p.m. And the board's ratification is subject to the union's ratification. But if all goes well, I think that this represents a real win for the county and avoidance of a lot of additional expenses which could have been down the road. If the board has any questions, I'd be happy to answer it, but just trying to present an expedited view of this so you could move on.
Questions? No questions, but maybe I guess just for public context, first off, I'd like to say thank our attorneys, our finance director, our personnel, human resource staff, who do handle, I guess you could say, the nuts and bolts of the negotiations. And even though this is the first time it's coming to us publicly as the Board of Commissioners, because we're taking action, those folks do brief us regularly on the progress of the negotiations in executive session as allowed by law, and we give them informal guidelines for kind of setting the broad parameters, and glad to hear that it has resulted in a successful outcome and successful outcome in time for the beginning of the new fiscal year.
The only comment I'd make is I think it's fair to both sides. I mean, we certainly value the employees. We want to make sure that they're being fairly compensated. We also have a fiduciary responsibility to manage the citizens' taxpayers' dollars. So I think these agreements are a good balance and fair to all the parties involved. So that was the only thing I would add. All right. And I would clarify just again for the public. Well, we're doing away from per diem. Per diem allowed people to, in effect, have a banana and a granola bar for lunch and yet charge the maximum amount per diem, which off the top of my head, I don't know what it was. I've never charged it. this will change that process to where you'll get reimbursed for your actual expenses up to a maximum allowable amount.
And that's not locally, but where you're traveling. Exactly. You have to travel on county business. Right. The meal reimbursement.
It in effect says you'll get reimbursed for your actual expenses. Yeah. All right, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to ratify the July 1, 2018 to June 30th, 2021 collective bargaining agreement between the county and the Lincoln County Employees Association, LCEA, including the Deputy District Attorney's subunit, as tentatively agreed to by the county negotiating team, and to authorize necessary signatures on the final agreement to complete its execution. This action is contingent on the final ratification of the agreement by LCEA and the DDA members.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries. I'll entertain a motion for the Lincoln County Employees Association, ROADS.
I move to ratify July 1, 2018 to June 30, 2021 collective bargaining agreement between the county and the Lincoln County Employees Association, ROADS, LCEA, as a tentative agreement by the county negotiating team and to authorize the necessary signatures on the final agreement to complete its execution. This action is contingent on the final ratification of the agreement by LCEA ROADS members.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries. Now I'll entertain a motion on Transportation District.
Mr. Chair, I move to ratify the July 1, 2018 to June 30th, 2021 collective bargaining agreement between the county, Lincoln County Transportation Service District, and the Lincoln County Employees Association Transit, LCEA Transit, as tentatively agreed to by the county negotiating team, and to authorize necessary signatures on the final agreement to complete its execution. This action is contingent on the final ratification of the agreement by LCEA Transit members.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
That motion carries. I'll entertain a motion for the non-represented employees.
I move to authorize the same COLA adjustment to the non-represented employees as granted by the LCEA members, and to include the increase in life insurance benefits starting July 1, 2018.
Second.
It's moved and seconded. I'll just comment that, as has been a practice in recent years, even though these employees are not represented by an association, practice has been to award the same changes in benefits and salary structure that are being awarded to the other associations.
That's been the practice for a long time, hasn't it, Mr. Belmont?
Or
institutional members?
So it's just treating everybody equally.
Yep.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That motion carries.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you. Sorry. All right. Now we just need the votes of the unions, right?
Yep.
Okay. And we should know that.
We think 5 o'clock today is what they've indicated to
me. Excellent.
Okay, very good. All right, we'll move on. Getting near the end, reports. Any reports from commissioners?
Mr. Chair, I just briefly mention two more public meetings for the Commons Redevelopment Project, a presentation by our consulting team on the revised scaled back plan will be happening today at 2 o'clock at Toledo City Hall, this evening at 6 o'clock at Lincoln City's City Hall. For folks who are not able to attend, our public information officer, Casey Miller, will be videotaping the consultant presentation tonight at Lincoln City. That will be uploaded on the county website along with the other informational material about the Commons Project, and there will be a direct link to the form that people can fill out a feedback form either electronically, or if they want to do it by mail, regular mail, in writing, they can do that as well. But all that information is linked right from the homepage of the county website.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Thompson.
I pass.
I'll also pass.
I have a quick update, if I can.
Council Belmont.
On the biosolids issue, because I know we have some folks who are here again to talk about the biosolids issue, and I know one of the questions that was asked the last time we were meeting on this was whether or not the City of Depot Bay's NPDES permit and their land application component to that, that's supposed to be held a hearing on that, or actually the public comment period. I did confirm that that runs until 7/13/15. So that's the 13th of July at 5 o'clock p.m. And that if DEQ receives 10 or more written comments and a request, they'll do a hearing. But what I did want to, for the Davises, I confirmed that at this point they've only received 4 written requests.
No.
So now this is maybe a few days old.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they got them.
Okay, good. All right, I just wanted to make sure that was clear. The second thing is I did have a conversation with the city recorder and got some interesting information on what Depot Bay is doing. So they are including money in their budget to actually purchase a centrifuge. And so that's the dryer component of the biosolids issue. That's the thing that takes the water out of it. And the purpose for that particular the purchase that they're going to make is that they are contemplating actually moving to dry out the biosolids and take it to a landfill. They indicated, they didn't give me a specific time frame, although they were looking at a purchase to be made sometime in the fall. And then obviously it'll be an installation and they'll move towards that. So I don't know the specific date in which they will do that. But that seemed to be the direction they're heading. I think you might want to confirm that information in the hearing when you meet with them in July. So that's the additional information. Oh, I should note, they are very receptive to the meeting that we're going to be scheduling with all the entities that are engaged in this particular activity coming up here, and they would like to be talking about some regional solutions to this particular issue.
Do you have any timing estimated timing on when we might be able to get all those stakeholders together?
We don't at this point. It's really a little bit like herding cats. I want to make sure that when we get the folks, especially the folks, anybody that's here from the EPA or the state, that we get the right people here that we can ask the questions. We've got a lot of questions. Yep. So we need to line up. You know, I just don't want a single representative from DEQ here. I think there's multiple people we want to talk to. So lining up everybody to do that, I think, is important. I'm also trying to coordinate this with, I want to coordinate with Gomberg and Roblin, because, again, some of the solutions to this might entail some state changes in state law. And so we need the folks here listening to the input that's going to occur at this particular meeting who really can move forward with making changes in state law.
I had an opportunity to discuss with Representative Gomberg yesterday, and this is an issue that's of great importance to him. So he's aware, and we're working with him. Commissioner Thompson.
You know, trying to get all these people together is virtually impossible. In the summer months particularly. So, I mean, I don't know what's all on the agenda for the Coastal Summit, but it should be a topic on that summit.
You know, that's an interesting idea. I hadn't thought about that, but that might be an interesting idea to make this an adjunct to the Coastal Caucus when a lot of people will be together in Lincoln County, because this year it's in
Chinook Winds.
Yep, right. It's an ideal situation for that.
I hadn't thought about that as a date, but that might be a great idea is to set that, you know, either pre or post that conference.
Yeah, because I think the conference agenda itself is
The conference agenda is set. It's set that year in advance. Yeah. But we could do it around
that. It should have been a subject on that conference.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's our fault for dropping the ball.
We don't set the agenda.
Coastal Caucus staff. Yeah, but a year ago we didn't know this was going to bubble up.
It came up so late.
Yeah. But I think we might be able to make this an adjunct to that meeting.
Because to just try to piecemeal these people together, I don't think there's a chance.
Okay. But if we could get them, like you said, either right before or right after the main program,
that's a great
opportunity.
Great time for that.
Let's try for that.
Okay, now's the time for constituent input, and again, we ask you to limit your comments to no more than 5 minutes, and I'm going to, before you come forward, Alan, there are two groups I sense. We have a county commons group, and we have a biosolids group. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to address the board on a matter other than those two? Okay, so we have two groups. All right, we'll let you go first then, Andrew.
I want to talk about biosolids too.
Well,
please.
Okay.
The one thing that I'd like to ask is that we discussed earlier. Oh, I called the powerhouse, and they are only a detox, and they let you be there maybe 5 to 6 days, maybe a week, and what they try to do is get people to transition out into rehab and the rehab. I'd just like to reiterate, please, we all need to look at this as a big problem in our community. A lot of people, there's towns that ship their homeless towards the coast. A lot of people go towards McMinnville because McMinnville has a lot of resources, public resources, adult family service, drug and alcohol counseling. It's really available there. Maybe we can look at McMinnville, maybe do some model with them. We're a rich community with all this attitude that people come to Newport. They're like, it's almost like what happens in Newport stays in Newport kind of thing. And the mentality people come here, we are not their backyard, so that they come here. Defecated time. So the one thing I'd like to ask is that we really, really, really look into getting a center here, a rehabilitation center like Truman. I understand that the cost is great, though in the long run, it's going to work out better. If we get out there and educate our children on drugs and alcohol, then I believe we're going to have a better result. It's to me to think that we as a county, we get all these millions of dollars from the sin taxes, cigarettes, alcohol, cannabis.
kratom, all these things. Well, we're making all this money off the misery of others and healing of others with the cannabis. And I like to say, when you speak of cannabis, that it's cannabis, not marijuana, because that we're working on that that outlook, you know, per se. Doggone it! It's something that's to my heart. We got a friend, like we said. I said earlier, she wanted detox. The hospital says, "Oh, sure, we got detox," but then she gets there, they don't have a detox. She's a taxpayer. She gets lots of money. Pays rent around here. Buys the alcohol around here. Maybe we could talk to the people that do sell the alcohol. And I know I'll talk to people in our industry about getting rehabilitation. That's what we are working on right now, is cannabis is an exit drug to help alleviate the opioid problem, the alcohol, because alcohol is a drug too. People might not think it's a drug. Alcohol is a drug. I know I'm not making too many friends out there. I got a shirt out there on the corner that says, "Smoke weed, not speed." And last week, somebody put a hangman's noose on the corner for me. That kind of blasé, blatant, no big deal, you know, it's just a hangman's noose. The police, I didn't get the answers that I wanted, per se. And I respect our police officers and all that they do for us in our town here. Though I have seen numerous times where these people that are drinking and out on the streets and using the street drugs, there's nothing the police can do. There's one individual I've called many times, and this person is just out there. Granted, we are going to do what we want to do. It's our bodies. No one should really tell us what to do, put in our bodies. Though when it starts causing ourselves and those around us, they say drugs are a victimless crime. I don't believe that. 1 minute. Parents who use drugs, I've been one, using meth. I wasted a lot of time that I could have had with my child. And it took me 53 years. It took me 25 years to get 1 year sober and then struggling with it after 6 years. Now I've got 4 years. And I figure it's better late than never. To raise the awareness for this, sincerity, it is so important to get this done for us, because for us to be making all this money on all these tourists and all these people that come in and party in our town and then turn away those that need our help is very sad. And I know you guys, I pray you guys will be working on that for us all. God bless you. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I mentioned in passing.
Go ahead.
Well, just about.
Thank you, Edgar.
Because it has come from so many different people, not only at this meeting and previous meetings, but about the need for a detox. I just saw in my email this morning, you know, I mentioned we had talks, community discussions going on before, and those basically petered out. There was a lack of meeting of the minds, but again, Samaritan reached out to us with our new leadership in HHS. 2 weeks from today, we're going to have a very small initial meeting, just a few Samaritan people, a few Lincoln County people, including me, to say, okay, how do we get this restarted? What will be the parameters of the discussion? And then from there will be larger meetings, you know, getting the tribal program to the table, the private providers, law enforcement, because it hugely impacts them, as we know that there are all kinds of people who are in jail who really should be in rehab, and try to get the process going again to get this need met. So I just want people to be aware that is finally restarting.
And with the decriminalization of methamphetamines, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. now become cheaper on the streets, and we did it to say, oh, well, let's help people that are in trouble, mm-hmm. keep them out of the jails. Mm-hmm. We're keeping them out of the jails, but now we have nowhere to put them. That's how we go for positive. God bless you. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. Again, I sense there are two groups in the audience. We let Ms. Kaczmarek address us on the commons. So let's have the commons group people go next.
I think it's just me.
All right. Okay. Well, then come on forward. We know you, Carla, but for the record, please introduce yourself.
My name is Carla Perry. I live in Newport. And I just want to quickly address
the meetings that are coming up. I am a member of the Master Plan Visioning Committee. I received a complaint this morning from someone who had attended the Yahatz meeting last night, the presentation by the consultant to get the facilitate outreach to the outskirts to all parts of the county. So the complaint was that they received no notice that there had been an announcement of the meeting there, and normally the Commons would have put that information on their reader board outside. That was not done because they didn't receive any information. This is a long-term problem. Yes, I had conversations, email with Casey Miller to help facilitate getting the information out in prior meetings. It's information is being sent out from the county, but it is not appearing in the newspapers. It's not appearing on radio. It's not appearing in the public. So there's a disconnect somehow between sending out one announcement and getting the word to the people. So it's not effective, and I'm very concerned that the two meetings today also will be poorly attended. I think there were three people who came, or maybe six, last night. And if the purpose is to get the word out to the people, it's not happening. And at the Depot Bay meeting, this has been going on, so there's lack of information to the people. At the Depot Bay meeting, Commissioner Hall said, we're sending out the information. It's not our fault if they don't print it. But I think it is the responsibility of the county to not only send out the information, but make it available to the people. So if there is a breakdown between sending it out and where it appears, perhaps the county could investigate why. Do they need it in a different format? What is the problem? Because you do want public outreach at these meetings. The point of holding these meetings with the consultants is to let people know that the meetings are taking place and that they have a chance to weigh in. But it's not happening. And so I am concerned that the two meetings today will also be poorly attended, and that will defeat the purpose of the meetings. I also asked at the last visiting meeting that a meeting be held in Newport as well. It wasn't on the agenda to present it to the people. I really think it's critical that the master plan, of the current right size plan, be presented to the people of Newport as well as the outskirts. So I guess I request that you look into it, why there's that disconnect, and hopefully, it probably is too late today, but know that the other two meetings will probably be poorly attended. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, anyone else on County Commons? All right. Biosolids, who wants to go first? Alan, you are coming forward. Thank you for your patience. And welcome back.
Yeah. First of all, thank all you guys. You guys tried, and all employees, county employees, appreciate it. We all appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Sometimes I might not act like it because it is kind of a hot topic, but I actually do.
Can we get the microphone turned back towards you?
Okay, here, I'll move over this way. Well, I looked up some things, and what we found out, which is for your legal people back there, it's an ORS 468B005 and 468B period 060, and it's a liability for damage for fish and wildlife habitat, and it's for all cost. And all we need to do is to find out, this is a USGS survey, and it says they found all these contaminants in, I believe, 9 different sites, and all of them had it. Well, if we find any of this in this water, we need to take tests above the last place, which would be Man's Place, and check the water there, then check it down below by Jerry Cusador's. If we find any of these toxins in here, they're automatically, according to ORS's, they're liable and have to pay for all the damage and redo the river. And also, on the Coho, it's a US code, and it's 1533 E, Title 16. It says any man-made factors affecting continuance, existence of any endangered fish or any such thing like that, which is would be the Coho, that's another law that you know you guys could look at. And you know, that's you know, based on the, there's one other one, it's 468.048, and it's a minimum dissolved oxygen, and it shall always be maintained between 7 and 9 milligrams. I tried to find this through DEQ and EPA, and I could not locate it. So I don't know if they can, you know, if you have the ability to find out where the dissolved oxygen is. But if it isn't in this level, that's also a violation of, you know, of the state of Oregon's codes. So I'm just, you know, trying to, I don't know if you legal eagles back there have found this or not. I'm just trying to give you a little bit more information, you know, to work with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
And the only reason I wear a hat, I have glaucoma. I've had 2 surgeries. It's no respect for you guys at all, but the lights bother me.
Sure. Thank you for letting us know.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Anyone else? Welcome back, Kaylee.
Hi. Kaylee Davis, Alan's wife, farmer, grandma, grandmitude.
Cool shirt.
Thank you. Thank you. Got to spend the weekend with our grandkids, 4 of them here in Newport, and celebrate our 6-year-old's birthday. So that was fun. But, you know, we haven't gotten these 4 to the river. I really want to do that. But we have to know it's safe. So, again, I want to extend our thank yous. We do appreciate it. Sometimes it feels like we're beating you up, but we really don't mean to do that. You're just who we have to come to. So I have a few questions. Ottercrest, where are we with Ottercrest? That's Howard Weiskiver. That's right by the church.
Yeah, and I actually asked the people, Bay, that's one of the questions I asked them, is I thought that maybe they were doing the treatment of the Ottercrest waste, and they don't. So I did confirm that. And they think that they have their own wastewater treatment
facility. It is, H2ONS. And it's, H2ONS. Yeah, John Huntington out of Troutdale. And when I talked to them, they referred me to Tom Rask in Portland, and that was an attorney's office. I called, but he did not return my call.
Can you give me that information?
I can. I do have that. And then number 2 was Newport. Somebody had said that Andrew Grant had mentioned working with a farmer in Logsdon or that area.
That's what I understood. Is but they were looking at a potential site. Then I don't think they're doing anything yet there. It's a potential.
Because I thought they had agreed, so I was curious.
Again, remember, I think the difference with Newport is the Class A biosolids don't, and I'm not exactly sure, but I don't think the Class A biosolids require the same processes.
They don't require a permit, but they're still in very liquid form, and they're still very dangerous. They can't get the stuff out. Okay, so I'm glad to hear you're working with representatives to that 5 different state representatives I had picked up somewhere. But we did contact Roblin and Senator Roblin and Representative Goldberg and have had communications. He did send back to us. We had sent Representative Goldberg email, and he kind of just came back with a real short email, and I said, did you really look at it? Because I sent him our outline we've given to you and everything we've done. And he came back with a more thorough response. And he says he's going to follow up with the DEQ as far as more testing to go on this. But basically says, looks like we need to change the law. And we can't do that till 2019. So in the meantime, I guess what we look to you as the county leaders is maybe we're to the lawsuit. Maybe that's the only way to stop if they won't stop any other way. Number 4, Emerald Springs. Does the county, do you guys get bottled water? Do you contract with anybody for bottled water? Is it Emerald Springs by chance?
What's the local company?
Emerald
Springs?
Okay, we did call Emerald Springs. I spoke to him, the gentleman himself, and he tells me he does get the water from Seal Rock. Seal Rock gets the water from Toledo. Toledo gets the water from the Siletz River. It's Siletz River water.
Okay.
and it's gone through some other kind of a purification process, but they can't. So most, yeah, but they still can't get it all out, and it's depleting the river even more. As the temperature, as the water goes down, the temps go up, dissolved oxygen goes down. So as we come into summer, really, should they be pulling water from that Siletz River? Should they be pulling it at all? I want to thank also our interns.
I just spoke, I mumbled, you heard me, I said osmosis, but I think it's ozone.
No, it's reverse osmosis.
They're using, okay.
Reverse, yeah, I couldn't remember exactly. I don't remember all the terms. Next thing was, thank you, Casey, for printing this out, but it's kind of a sad note that in Oregon now, there's a place that's oregon.gov, you can go and find out where the water problems is, what rivers are in trouble. Well, the harmful algae blooms, and when I clicked on it, the permanent, and I can't read this well, but it's really sad that there's now a permanent warning on the Umpqua River, and I believe there's a, and I don't want to misquote it, but there's another river too. Permanent. It's not going away. Is that where we're going with the Siletz River? We can't let it get there. We need to stop it. Thank you. You already updated me on the Depot Bay hearing request. We'll get the 10. There's no problem there. But, you know, Bob Discus said he wanted to hear from everybody, and that would be a part of the permanent record, public record. So it would be considered in the process. So a letter from you guys might really carry some weight with us. And from everybody, I'd like to thank everybody for your ongoing support. We really appreciate it.
But that would be a letter from us formally requesting a public hearing on the mm-hmm. Depot Bay permit. What do you think? Okay, sure. Let's do that. Sure.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Lawson Bar is the other river that has the permanent warning on it. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if I told you this, but I did talk with Paul Kennedy and Rosie, and I can't remember her, not Rosie, I'm sorry, Renee. Rosie is Senator Roblin. And on some of my complaints, or our complaints, with the DEQ. And I asked them very specifically if they did an environmental impact study. No, Oregon did not have to do an environmental impact study. That's pretty scary in itself. And then I just wanted to, okay, well, one other thing. So maybe we should do our own environmental impact study. I'm going to look into doing one. And number 9 was the wells and a grant. Maybe if where we are in the wells.
Could I just briefly update? I got some more information out of Benton County this morning. I met with Rebecca Austin, the acting head of HHS. She said she's definitely interested to forward the information to her and to 2 of her key public health people, and we will look into seeing if we could get a similar program going here.
Then I'd like to make a comment. You mentioned 2 rivers that are now under permanent ban. I don't know exactly what kind of ban you've got. So would you give that information to Wayne?
Casey, if you found Casey, that, could you just send it directly to all of us?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Oh, which like green line?
Christy can get it.
Okay. I've tried to email, and I keep getting, I'm having luck with yours, but I keep getting yours back. And I did try to send you a couple pictures. I was hoping you could see it. The one off
yours.
The Twin Bridges. Did you?
Yeah.
Did you get the Twin Bridges with the boy on the
airship?
Okay, I keep getting mail failures, so I didn't know whether I actually got them back. Did you get it also, Doug? I know I got a mail failure.
I've gotten a lot of emails, and I've seen the pictures.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, I never know when they come back, because I've also tried to share the outline that we've had working.
Them, I should be getting it, because it's the same format.
Give us that 2 rivers, please.
Yep.
Okay. Yes.
I'll get you copies.
Okay. Thank you again.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Next.
Good morning. Yep, still morning. I'm Celine Relatus, live in Toledo. You mentioned, Mr. Belmont, about Depot Bay. I'm curious, when they do dry that, what happens to the water from that? Where are they to dispose that?
You know, I don't know the technology that well. I think a centrifuge is like a big swirling thing in which it takes the water out of there. And I assume that the water goes through the either the same treatment process they've got now. I don't know. I actually don't know what happens.
That's a question.
Mention something if you don't mind. Centrifuges are used commonly on boats, and we can take diesel oil, all kinds of things, and it separates the quality of water by the speed of the
turn, and you can clean up a lot of things. I haven't looked at exactly this issue related to biosolids, but that's the way they work on boats.
So it'd be great if we could get somebody from Lincoln City's plant, because they've already got a centrifuge in place, and that's what they're doing to before they take their...
The liquid flows away, and then you have...
So we, if they the can answer questions like that.
Pardon?
Yeah, where did the liquid go?
Where does the liquid go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know.
That's a good question. Yeah,
we need to know that.
Yeah, but where does it end up?
What happens
after it's spun off?
I would assume it goes back into the treatment, or no, it goes back into the treatment plant, but I don't know. I can't say that. I don't know.
We can find out.
In Newport, they ship it back, they send it back into the ocean, the fluid. So it has to be below the chlorine level. We talked to him over there.
Okay.
We did this.
Andrew. And he said it has to be below the chlorine level of the ocean. Then they send it back into the ocean.
That's our dumping ground.
Well, that's what he's just looking
for. But it may be pure water. You can centrifuge water down to your element. We need to find out.
We'll find out.
What's
up? Okay. Yep. Good. And then you also mentioned a joint meeting. Is this with all the cities? Because you did send that letter.
Yes, and that's then everybody's indicated they're willing to come to a meeting and meet with us. And we want to get the right people at the table.
Get the cities, get EPA, good. DEQ.
And then possibly join it up with the one that you already have with at Chiniquins. I heard you say that.
That's a possibility.
We're thinking we'll just schedule it around that time when they're meeting there, because we'll have a lot of the state folks here in here. So that's a good idea.
Uh-huh. Kill two birds.
Yeah.
You have your audience there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I just happen to want to read information that just was posted like 38 minutes ago from a friend of mine who's written you all and the Depot Bay for a hearing with the Sweet Home Public Works Department. And I'll share it on our Save Our Celeste River page. From our Public Works Department, due to recent harmful algae bloom identified in Detroit Lake and associated... Cyanotoxins found in the city of Salem's drinking water, the cities that collect water from the South San Juan River formed a coalition to develop a plan. Are you guys aware of this? Mm-hmm. Good.
So I mean, we're aware of the problem around the
right
lake, but not this issue.
Cyanotoxin.
But thank you, I wasn't sure. So simultaneously, the Oregon Health Authority started formulating a set of temporary administrative rules, proposing a temporary rule requiring all water systems to monitor for cyanotoxins, which are supplied by surface water susceptible to harmful algae blooms. Water providers will be required to monitor the raw water prior to treatment processes every 2 weeks from May 1st through October 31st annually. Sweet Home began collecting periodic samples testing for cyanobacteria in our raw water starting Monday, June 25th. The city of Sweet Home has voluntarily sampled our finished water after treatment and prior to entering the distribution system on June 15th. These results require 7 to 14 business days as a result. And then they provide customers with questions may contact Sweet Home Public Works Department. And then they also have a link at the very bottom with all the chemicals. Now I will share that. Well, I can email it to you and I'll share it on our page, but it seems that we can follow that, you know, or we already are doing it, but we can just more combine our efforts to build that law that we need to do, because 2019's going to be here really quick. And one of our elders, Kayleen, spoke about the Emerald Springs. You know, they can purify that or they could run their process, but they can't get it all out. And so we're purchasing, you know, dead water. And it does taste well, but it's not good for us. So I wanted to say the elder asked today, what's the permit process? Well, you heard all these different places sold the Celeste River water to Emerald Springs. Who gave them permission? Do you all know the answer to that?
I don't. Do you know how water rights like that work?
cut Emerald Springs pulls off the municipality.
Yeah, I think they just probably get the water like any other body hooked up to the system, and then they do a further processing with it.
That sounds like in the Seal Rock Water District.
Yeah, I would assume, but I don't know the answer to that.
So I assume they're, you know, again, just a guess. Unlike say Nestle, when they do water, they have to get a special permit because they're pulling so much. But
well, they were actually going right to get a water right specifically.
Yeah, they got a specific water right, but to bottle from a municipal system, there's no specific permitting application that we're aware of.
I don't know.
Or licensing.
I don't know.
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, she asked me to ask that. I'm like,
I don't know.
Good question, because we don't know the answer.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be buying it. I do know that. So the meetings that you all will be having, is that open to the public?
Absolutely.
Or, and it'll be posted on your page?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Okay. I believe that's all I have.
Thank you.
Oh, just a little family announcement. This is my daughter and my grandson in the paper today.
Great.
For the Lights of Hope Revived.
Great, congratulations.
That's why I'm here, for my grandchildren, your grandchildren.
That's why we're all here.
I got one on the way, second one on the way.
I got another one on the way, too.
Good to see
you.
All right, next.
Will you guys go on, or are you just here?
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm not stepping on anybody's toes. Okay, good morning, this is Cindy George once again, and so I want to start out by saying that I come here in nothing but love. I have let go of all the anger, the animosity, and my past, and all that has transpired. And so I'm going to try and keep nothing but beauty, because I'm all about solutions. Okay, I'm done fighting the fight, because we now have this awakening, and so I don't have to fight no more. And it is so. All I'm doing is praying, and I'll stay in that prayer. As far as the water bottle treatment plants, and they are using reverse osmosis, I have looked into reverse osmosis. Betty has looked into reverse osmosis. It potentially can take it all out, okay, really close. It goes down, from what I understand, you know, it separates it down to a billionth in particles. And so there's supplies out there for personal use reverse osmosis. So that's something that we need to, because this ain't going away. So we need to see how, if we can get suppliers, if we can get discounts in the state of Oregon, buy it bulk, and make those available to our public. But the problem with reverse osmosis is that it will strip everything, and so you have to put the calcium and magnesium back, or it will kill you, just like drinking distilled water. I learned that the hard way. So make sure that, you know, education, water education is going to be huge. Second thing, Detroit Lake is now considered, or Lake Billy Chinook. They just called out, Lake Billy Chinook is now toxic. And the other big bottler, Emerald Springs, I do believe Emerald Springs is where you get your water. I just saw them deliver. It's not Geyser or whatever, the other one.
It is Emerald Springs.
It's Emerald. One of them is from Lake Billy Chinook area. They take it out of the Metolius River. One of them is local. I know the hospital takes from Lake Billy Chinook, okay? They don't buy local, which I thought was kind of funny, especially in our hospital. They should drink the water here. That's just my own personal opinion. So now we've taken from that, okay? Hospital issues, we've got hospital issues that I'm gonna try and, let's bring all these things into light. And Toledo, oh, that is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I have some gifts, and I hope you can accept them. Okay, do with them what you want. This is for you. This is going to keep you in that gentle balance. And
Thank you.
I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay.
This means a lot to me. Let's see.
And pray on this one this morning. I'm a number person too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good.
But the way you use that knowledge is so foreign to me, because I have no value in money at all. I would give it away. It has no purpose for me. And so you need to think about how you use that power you have. You, Terry, I want to connect you back to the people of Celeste. This was gifted to my family. Okay?
Don't ever. They're not your Indians. And I heard you, no, you can laugh, but I heard that in a meeting.
Well,
those are the people you represent, and you represent that water. You've lived your whole life on that water. Stay connected to it. Do with that what you want, okay? I haven't figured out where you're from. I'm still trying to decide whether you've got a good heart or not. And I'm going to leave that door open for you, okay? So let's hope we start figuring it out, and let's find some solutions, okay? You guys have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much, Steve.
You're very welcome.
Anyone else?
Chair, I'd like to thank you one more minute. I forgot to let you know, Save Our Wild Salmon, it's located out of Seattle in Spokane. They got a hold of us yesterday, and they asked if anything they could do, they're willing to help. They have affiliates in Oregon, and I don't know if they're involved in some of these federal lawsuits or not, but that's somebody else, you know, you guys can talk to. They're really interested in this. Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? No.
Just this short.
You've had your 5 minutes, Kayleen, but go ahead.
The county is working with Emerald Springs, and that is coming out of the select river. I would like to ask that you guys look for your bottled water elsewhere.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
As long as it's not Nestle.
We're adjourned.